Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, and you're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com or CommunityProgressiveRadio.org. Well, you know what I'm going to say. I'm going to say we have a very special show today, and it is. It was a community call-in show, and we had a community conference call with an organizer of Boycott the Presidential Elections, Terry Lee, and people sent in their questions, and people got to ask questions of Terry on the show. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with a recording of the national conference call about boycotting the presidential election. Terry Lee, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, and thank you for your work and for joining us this evening.
Oh, thank you so much for the warm welcome, Cindy. It's so nice to be speaking with you and others tonight. I really appreciate the opportunity. Cindy, I guess it was during the Occupy Wall Street rise that the folks were putting up their signs and chants, and a lot of it was about the system. The system, the system, the system. That kind of stuck with me, that it's really a systemic problem and not really a political thing about candidate A or candidate B or this party or that party. But I do want to add a little something before I begin. I really did not initiate the call to boycott the election. The groups popped up on Facebook by a gentleman named Emmanuel Saros. And I was just an active participant. So I didn't really create that. I just kind of jumped in because it really resonated with me. And it kind of took off from there. And I think those Facebook groups popped in probably late in the year in 2011. And then it was January 2012 when I spoke with Emmanuel about the possibility of being presenters in a panel at the Left Forum in March. Are you familiar with that? The gathering in New York City? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we formed this panel, and that was the beginning of it kind of jump-starting, and that's how it sort of took hold. And that took place in March of 2012. And at the Left Forum, what I saw mostly when it came to panels and discussions about the election was mostly, as we still are seeing even now, the left kind of circling around some version of electoral politics. So the boycott was pretty unpopular. It really didn't resonate. It was rejected. There were a lot of Green Party participants at the Left Forum. I went to a few election-type panels, and they were very complex with numbers about how to strategize a win, how third parties can win. This sort of thing was very popular at the Left Forum. So anyhow, one thing that is a little unique about the boycotts we tend to hear means to not do something, right? To refrain, to not make a purchase, to withhold in some way. This boycott needs a word in front of it. Perhaps it would be, you know, to actively boycott in a way of a direct action, to protest. So it's really a call to organize the non-voter into some direct action on Election Day or before Election Day. So I think that's a little bit of a unique feature. It's not just refraining. And when I first Googled early on election boycotts, it's fairly common around the world. This mm-hmm. is not an unusual thing, but it seems to be often called by an opposition party. So a political party in another country will sometimes call for a boycott to sort of harm their political opponent. Does that make sense to you as a political strategy? Hello?
Hello?
Are you there?
Yes, we're still here.
Okay, so what's a little different about this is this is a call that's coming from the people, from the citizens, from the workers, not from an elected official. That makes it a little bit unique. And it's called for direct action, so to be active on Election Day. So I've done this now about four times, talking on the radio or having an interview, four times since about February. And there's been some updates. And if I could, I'd like to share some of the new things that are going on so that people can see in a broader picture what's taking place. First of all, we're on Twitter, and that's Election Boycott 2012. Probably later on this evening or tomorrow, we will be releasing an Election Boycott website, and that's electionboycott2012.org. I don't know if you caught this or not, but a fellow boycotter, Ted Rall, who's also a syndicated columnist and a political cartoonist and author, made a cartoon for us, a special cartoon, so we appreciate Ted Rall's support. And we got a unique Rall boycott cartoon of that. And the Proletarian Center for Research, Education, and Culture has officially endorsed the boycott. They are boycott supporters, and they have been very kind and generous and posting a lot of boycott news on their blog. So that's been very great. And I don't know if listeners are aware that this past week, Occupy Chicago, or let's say a portion of Occupy Chicago, were burning their voter ID cards by the Obama headquarters just last week during the DNC convention. That was really, no pun intended, sparked by the call to boycott the 2012 election. And here's how it happened. We made these direct actions, and we put up a few events, and one of them was to burn your voter ID card. And someone, Andy Sayer, announced in there, he said, I'm going. And I sort of took note of that. He was one of the main organizers of the G8 NATO summit protest, and he said he was going to, you know, go, which is some indication of support. So then some other folks from Occupy Chicago asked, where's the Chicago organizing place? So I quickly developed a little place for them online, and before you know it, a firestorm broke out, lots of discussion. People were getting notifications all the time. It was a very heated topic. And Occupy Chicago, which seemed to have some other points of disagreement, broke into kind of maybe two camps on this. One half for it, this radical action, and the other group saying this, we're against this, there's civil liberties here, we fought for the vote and this sort of thing. But the next thing I know, I was getting pictures, people were sending me news stories of Occupy Chicago on the street, you know, by the Obama headquarters, burning their voter ID cards. I think it's noteworthy because we didn't see these type of things in 2008. It's fairly dramatic. And yes, it did springboard from the call to boycott the 2012 election. We have about 25 state organizing Facebook groups, and we've connected with someone who likes to call himself a boycott consultant, who I'm really grown quite fond of, Mark Smith, who's not on Facebook, but he's a Twitter maniac, and he can say more in 140 characters than anybody I know. And he's the author of You've Got to Stop Voting and the book Consent to Tyranny. But there is some opposition. It's not all, you know, not everybody's on board with this. And so more lately, I've seen more kind of Facebook groups and articles popping up about this idea of rejecting the system. What people seem to be most comfortable with is rejecting the two-party system or boycotting the two-party system. For me, it would be rejecting the full system, the whole thing, because the system seems to be the problem, so that's why I won't go in the voting booth. But it seems there is some movement at least to the point of boycott the two-party system, the two corporate parties. And there's a lot of swirling around on the left among the various other third-party and independent choices. So I think we're starting to see that electoral politics doesn't really have so much to offer us. We saw an example of this most recently probably in Wisconsin during the recall election, where Citizens United and the money really you know, all the effort and energy put out in Wisconsin to recall Scott Walker didn't work, and money wins every time, you know. And it seems that these direct actions, these grassroots efforts to do things is a stronger move. So when people say, why not vote the third party, which it seems to be where we're kind of stuck, it seems to me that the strongest collective action we can take is to collectively and loudly and boldly reject the entire system, because that's really where the problem is. And I guess that's pretty much my overview.
Okay, so thank you, Terry Lee. I'll get into the questions in a second, but we have to, I hear some feedback, so if there's anybody on the call who's not myself or Terry Lee, can you press star 6 to mute yourself so we can have a clear recording of this for people who weren't able to call in? Thank you. The only thing that I would have to ask you before we get into the callers the people who emailed me their questions all week is how more people, I think, in the United States don't vote than do vote. And I don't know if that's because of apathy or if they're just disgusted with the whole system. You know, there's not really any choice. I talk to people in my own life that both ways. My children in 2004, my living children, they registered between the three of them about 100 of their friends who had never voted before. And their friends registered and they voted. And they voted for, just a minuscule lesser of two evils, John Kerry.
Yes.
Everybody was really voting against George Bush, I think. And then they saw what happened, and they said, oh, we're never going to vote again. And so how do you distinguish a boycott between how does the establishment, how does the system know that you're boycotting and not just...
Right. Right. I think that's why the actions are really important to have another form of protest. I mean, or people do sometimes say, like, well, what's it going to do? You know, what will be the result of this? Or they sometimes do think of what ticks off the establishment more. And I kind of, I think that notion that Glenn Ford of Black Agenda Report says to build a culture of resistance is what we're doing. We're kind of layering up objections and resistance. It doesn't really directly do anything, but then I guess I could argue the other way. Well, neither does voting. So how will the corporate parties or the establishment know? I think that's your question. Yes.
Yes.
But I guess it would be by the actions, by the activity, by being present. I mean, the card burning outside of Obama headquarters is pretty striking. I think that's somewhat dramatic to see young people burning up their voting cards. That had pictures swirling around, and I think that was noted. So more of that type of thing would be an indication, directly targeted at electoral politics.
What about...
None of this directly means if you do A, then you get B. It just all kind of piles on or adds this pressure of resistance, not participating, rejecting the system. It just adds to it, makes it a little tougher.
Well, what about the people who say, but we have some propositions in our state that we feel that we need to vote for? What about voting for down ticket and not voting for president, leaving that blank?
Yes, if their state permits that, this is really called to boycott the 2022 presidential election. So I do understand that people may want to do that, to vote it on the lower ticket or for some referendum. Sure.
Can I interrupt for a very quick second? This is
absolutely. I'm sorry, no. Can you please star six yourself?
I just want to say, in this election, we'll rank 92nd in presence of women, and no country in Europe would allow that, and our women are so dumbed down that they're being, and the same with minorities, no black senators. Why would women and minorities vote in this election?
You're interrupting two women right now.
And we asked
you to say that. Bye.
Yeah, so people emailed their questions into me, and I was going to take them in order of people that emailed their questions. So, yeah, please no further interruptions. So I'm going to call. Is there a Michael D. on the phone call? Michael D., I don't want to say anybody's full name. I ask people just to send their first name and their location. Michael, you're on the call?
Yes, it's Michael here.
Okay, great. So
hi,
you
have
the question. So would you like to ask Terry Lee your question?
Yes. I'm in a basic agreement here. Voting, merely serves to legitimate the political sphere.
Yes.
And have the citizens endorse their own ruling class representatives.
Yes.
But you've alluded to some things here, but what other political action can be open to us? What else is there we can do? I mean, we certainly can do some activity on the day of the boycott, for example, and that could be visible and so forth. But what is the? People often think of voting as the sine qua non of politics, but without which we have nothing. I consider it nothing to begin with. But what is it that
you're asking? Which actions or what can we do to be visible? Is that your question?
Beyond visibility, to have an effect,
Yeah, that's a tough question. It's a tough question. I mean, I don't know how you measure real effect. I mean, partially, that we're even talking about it is a little nudge in the right direction, that we're even entertaining this as a possibility is relatively new. We have had, as Cindy pointed out earlier, the non-voter, the apathetic voter, the I'm not going to vote person, but we haven't really talked about being kind of collective and organized. So I did start the state groups. There's probably about 20-something state groups for organizing, and people are starting to meet in person to do something visible. Hopefully attract the media is always the objective, to have some media attention that people are rejecting the system. So it's all those ways of being noisy, having antics, honking cars, right, having signs, chanting something, theatrics, these sort of things. I mean, have fun with it. Make some noise and get attention.
Lincoln, Baran Baskinian, and I are calling for a general strike on November 6th.
Great. You have to interrupt capital. Interrupting capital seems very important. Some ways to interrupt the money. But, those kinds of things. If you think of something, please let me know. We'll try to get that going. Well, where do you live, Michael?
New York.
Oh, you're near me. I'm here in New Jersey. I will say, I will share with you that I've been kind of disappointed that when I brought this up in the Occupy Wall Street forums, it really got shut down. I got shut down several times. That was disappointing to me. That it was not. I would have liked to have seen Occupy call for this in some way. But even when I just had it in the forums as a blog post, it did get shut down. There's just not much openness to it.
I don't know if I can keep going here, but I do think that the Occupy movement became derailed. There's some evidence that a lot of the people involved were actually co-opted literally and on the payroll of the DNC now. So,
That's true. Michael,
there is a lot of stuff.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Yes.
Can you star six yourself again? Is there Kathy M. on the phone call? Kathy M.? We have to give them a couple seconds to unmute themselves because it takes a while.
Okay, that's fine, sure. Yep.
Okay. Kathy, are you there?
Okay. So I'm going to ask you Kathy's question because some people obviously couldn't be on the call, but they're looking forward to listening to it on Sunday. Kathy asked you, how many people do you estimate are boycotting the election of the president?
Oh, it's hard to know. There's been like a hardcore group that's been more devoted to this. That group is pretty small, probably about 30-something of us are sort of meeting behind the scenes online. The groups together are about 1,000, but I don't know. I can't tell. You know how those Facebook groups don't have accurate numbers when you have events or something. They don't accurately represent. So it's a little hard for me to really answer that honestly, and I don't want to give a false number. It's hard to know how much is resonating. I would say there's probably at least around 1,000 or so that seem to be fairly supportive. That's just a casual glance. I'm just guessing. I don't know.
And then we have sites to register to vote. How about a site to register to non-vote?
Oh, I like that. I like that.
And obviously, this puts me in a little squishy situation because I'm actually running for Vice President of the United States on the PC party. So I got in a lot of trouble from the party for even discussing this. So
Cindy, let me say something to that. I applaud you for being such a cool vice presidential candidate that you can entertain all kinds of interesting ideas. How rich is that?
Well, I think that we have, most people have one goal, but there's many strategies to get there, and not every strategy fits every person, obviously. So Kathy also asked you, do you have a website that lists the intent of the boycott?
I didn't catch the word. You have a website that lists the what?
The intent.
Oh, yes, that's going to be unveiled maybe later today or tomorrow, electionboycott2012.org. And it's the finishing touches are just being put on it, and everything will be there, all the links and things. Or I want to say something else, Cindy, about your unique position of being a BT candidate and talking about the boycott. You know, just because folks don't talk about things doesn't mean it's not really there.
Right.
You're more honest to say it's there and acknowledge it and engage rather than pretend. We have a lot of politicians that pretend things and have their head in the sand. So I applaud you twice.
Well, we have to do, I think that this is a very, you know, like I don't pay my taxes. That's kind of a passive, kind of way to nonviolently protest the system, right? And so a lot of ways we should nonviolently protest the system, and this is one of them. And,
I said I learned about this a little bit when I heard you talking in New York that February when we met.
Right.
Yeah, it's the same idea.
Well,
right?
I think that everybody, can make their own decision as long as they're informed. I'm not going to jump all over somebody for making a I will jump on them for voting for one of the war parties, but not for making an informed decision. So is Kim L. on the call? Kim L., she said she probably wouldn't be able to be on the call. I could ask her question.
Sure.
So Kim says, instead of boycotting the election completely, why not vote in a way they will have to register with their computers? Like, why not write in peace, or you're fired, or any other idea we can come up with?
Right. So sort of this idea of write-in or occupy or this kind of idea. Because I think those write-ins get discarded. I was reading about that. What did they do with the write-ins in terms of tabulating them? If it's below a certain number, they just kind of ignore them. So I've been saying online there's really no such thing as a protest vote. You can't protest from the voting booth. These things tend to be ignored. And so they're not really tabulated or noted or looked at. So I think that's a little ineffective. But if you're on the street and the news media is filming, that is something that can be seen and noted. Like when I saw the pictures of the folks burning up the ID cards, it had an impact. It was sort of moving. But the quietly writing in Occupy or Peace or something, it just tends to be ignored. I mean, it feels good to sort of feel, you know, taking an action that is aligned with your conscience and your values, but I don't think it has as much impact. So we're going for what will have the greatest impact. So I've concluded that the boycott is the thing that would have the strongest impact. You know, I'm not saying it's going to do something amazing, but of all the things we can do during election time, I think this is the strongest one.
Well, there's something, too, that I have been constantly confronted with as an activist who does direct action. You know, I've been arrested so many times now, and we do this direct action, but we're told by the establishment that, you know, if you're not satisfied with our work, you need to go vote. You know, that's your part, is voting us out or voting us in. But how realistic is that when elections are so compromised and crooked?
Yes, well, that's what they want to do. They want to channel you in that. I sometimes think of the Electoral College as like a thing, like a contraption or a device that they built, and they want us to go in there. Like, don't go in there, as if it was a three-dimensional thing, you know?
May I say something?
Stay away. They built it.
May I say something?
Is your name Ursula? Is your name Ursula? Ursula's the next person on my list. So if we have time at the end, then I will invite you on, okay? But
great.
I do have this list of people who emailed me the questions. So
I emailed
Ursula,
you too. I don't know if you didn't get it.
Well, I just got it right before the call, so that means you're last.
Oh, okay.
So, Ursula, if you're on the phone call, can you unmute *6? And whoever you are, Rochelle or whatever, can you mute your phone again?
Sure.
*6, thank you. And at the end, I will call on you if we have time. Ursula, are you there? Okay. I guess Ursula's not there. Ursula says, hi, Terry and Cindy. I'm in agreement, and the current situation this election cycle doesn't help anyone. However, I worry that the right-wing religious nuts will take advantage of the situation and step up the minute we step down by not voting. I picture the scenario of The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood. Having lived in Alabama and Georgia, I could see this happening. Instead of inviting you to meet for lunch, these folks invite you to their church. They cannot be reasoned with. I've tried. They love the job creators and hate the poor. And she put job creators in quotations. How would you address the situation if a large number of people were to decide not to vote?
I'm sorry, what was the last thing you said? I didn't catch the last question. The last
I guess your question is, how do you address the situation of the right-wing religious nuts if a large number of people were to decide not to vote?
Right. And so that, it sort of seems to me an underlying question or an underlying suggestion is that the way to stop the right, the R's, is to vote Democrat to halt them. So,
Right. Like,
it's a little bit like what Cornel West has been saying and the other liberal progressives is, you don't have to be crazy about Obama. We know you're not happy with him, but you don't want those right-wing crazies in, so you have to vote Democrat, and that is another thought pattern or frame that gets you to walk into the voting booth to vote Democrat to block the Republican. So it seems very much like a Dem strategy, and there's so much fear about the right, and I do understand that, and there's some legitimacy to that, but it just plays into the Democratic Party frame, which is really what we're trying to go up against. So I just try not to live my own life based on decisions of fear, fear-driven choices as an individual. And I would hope as a citizen we do the same thing. Don't vote your fears or don't participate out of fear. It's a terrible way to, what a terrible thing the system's doing to us to, yeah, I have to go into the voting booth because I'm afraid. No, and I probably, and I won't say this with absolute certainty, but there's a lot of indicators that suggest except the next president is already selected. You know,
right.
We're just waiting to see who they picked. Who do they want to be the next face of empire? So there's this over emphasis on how much our vote counts or what it really means. We're not impacting it really to the degree that we think we are.
Well, I want to say too that there's all kinds of people on the right who think the same thing, that they're going to have to go vote for the Republican to keep the evil left wing Democrat out. And
Yeah, that's right.
So I'm hearing some background noise. So if you are not participating by asking a question, please press *6 because this is not doing good for our recording. We're not going to have clear recording. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, thank you. There was a few people. Maybe people just call later.
Okay.
So the next question comes from Kenneth. Kenneth P. Is there a Kenneth P. on the call?
Oh, if there is,
you can unmute your phone and ask Terry Lee the questions.
I think I know this fellow.
Mm-hmm. So we'll give Kenneth P. 5 more seconds, and then I'll ask you. He has 3 very good questions.
I'm sure.
Okay.
Okay, I'm ready. I'm listening.
Okay, these are from Kenneth P. As an African American who has heard, let me see. Okay, I didn't get that. As an African American who has heard friends rightfully discuss the sacrifices made in order to get the Voting Rights Act of 1965, can we embrace alternative party voting within the electoral boycotting framework?
I'm going to have to go with my boycott consultant, that's in quotes too, Mark Smith, who I adore, who says voting is voting, and boycotting is boycotting. So boycotting means no voting. We're going to take a little hard line on that. I don't see how you can do both unless you're talking about boycott the two parties. You know, that's a little different.
Right. Okay. And then his second question is, how can we focus electoral boycotters around a strategy versus inefficient hit-and-miss tactics?
Being more organized, well, the strategy is to be active in our location, in our locales, noisy as we can. I think we're doing all that we can be doing without money and the machine that the corporate parties have, or even some of the third parties have. We don't have that. We're just folks using social media, so we have to just utilize that as best we can. We're not funded with, you know, it's just the efforts of folks who are contributing their talents and time, right?
I got involved with a third party that doesn't have a machine. I don't even think we have a skateboard, but anyway.
It's hard to do things without resources.
It's impossible to do things without resources.
So let's say this then. For not having resources, money, and technology at our beck and call, we're doing pretty well.
Yes. Thank goodness
given that it's just people power.
Yeah, thank goodness we still have the internet and this kind of opportunity to get together to talk. So,
Kenneth's question is
how do we prevent electoral boycotters from disenfranchising blacks in the same way other movements did, e.g., the ERA, union movements, Occupy, and I guess given the 1% issues, 1% of public contracts go to black businesses, and that's never discussed. So how do we prevent electoral boycotting from disenfranchising blacks and other...
He's asking a really tough question that I struggle with, too. I'm not sure that I have really a pat answer for this. I saw when the Occupy Chicago firestorm broke out online that there was this division, and shortly afterward there was a group, something like we will not be burning our voter ID cards, like a protest, and it was a counter-protest to those in Occupy who were burning their cards, and what appeared it seemed to be groups of from the black community were posting pictures, you know, that they were opposed to this action. I'm not insensitive to that, and I just have really have sort of let that be because I understand the conflict that must present. So I just sort of let that be. I don't really try to force it. I don't know if that's the answer he's looking for, but those are my own thoughts on it.
My whole thought of this is that, you know, many women and many, you know, persons of color had to get beaten and, you know, they had, some of them died, you know, looking for the right to vote. And my question is, you know, what kind of system doesn't just extend those rights to people without them having to go through that kind of thing?
It's so cruel. I mean, they control who's let in and who's. I mean, it's vicious. It's vile. So who wants to participate in such a vile system? When actually, another way of looking at it is, you know, so you go to the voting booth. What's there for you? It's all going to an empty cupboard. There's nothing there. Why would you go and look for food in an empty cupboard? You wouldn't. So. Think about what is there for you should you vote. And people are dying now with your vote, you know, and these elected officials currently. And I think that has should play into it as well.
I think it's this whole thing is like we're going to go to an empty cupboard looking for something to eat, no matter how many times we've gone to that empty cupboard and there hasn't been anything there. You know, so some people.
So it's time to stop going there.
Trapped
in some ways, this idea is just really not such a complicated one. It doesn't have anything to offer. Don't go in there. They created this system to serve them. It serves them. Don't participate. There's nothing there for us.
Okay, so is there a Chad from Connecticut on the call?
Oh, I think I know him too.
Chad? Chad, are you there? Okay, so I think we kind of answered Chad's question, but I just want to read it in case you have something to offer. Instead of not showing up at all, wouldn't it be better to show up at your local polling place to cast either a blank ballot or one that votes for the local offices and leaves the POTUS line blank? No, I think we already... answer that.
Yeah, I think we responded that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
So thank you, Chad, for sending in your question. Let me see. We have another question.
Yeah, I'd like to add a little something here. Okay. What I find partially, which is a value of the boycott, a side value, is it gets people really thinking about their vote.
Mm-hmm.
And giving it some thought. And what I like about the boycott is I think it's giving a little home, a little place, to coalesce and to be with other non-voters and not kind of be ostracized or looked at like there's something, you know, some stigma attached to it. It's been sort of, you know, liberating and communal, and I like that.
Okay, the next question, I think we've pretty much covered that, and I don't know the person's name. It was anonymous on my blog, so... Samuel K., is there a Samuel K. on the call? Fort Mill, South Carolina.
Someone coming on? I heard a little noise.
Oh, Samuel, are you there? Yeah, if you're, I hear a noise too. If you're not... Terry Lee or me or Samuel, could you mute your phone, do *6, please?
Hello?
I am hearing some background.
Okay.
Samuel's question is really, I think he's more of promoting Jill Stein. So he thinks that a vote for Jill Stein would be better than boycott. Do you have any comments on that? You did hear about third party.
Yes, I do. I like there's a strategy that the my Left Forum panelist friend Emmanuel suggested, which seems like an interesting and it seems to me wise third-party strategy that I agree with. And his suggestion is for the third-party candidate to not run in the presidential elections. And he says, he suggests it's kind of a little bit slightly humiliating or embarrassing because you know that there's, you know, everybody knows, the voters and the candidates know that there's really no viable way to win given how the system shuts them out. But to continue to grow the parties and work locally to build the alternative infrastructure down below at the local level, and to collectively call for a boycott at the top. And I kind of like that because the third-party candidates, there's an argument that it advances the agenda, that it energizes the party from below, but I don't know that it's true, even though we say it. I mean, we've been saying this for a long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we have real evidence, measurable evidence, to really say that this is so, even though we kind of throw it out each election time. Is it true? I don't know. I don't see evidence of that. But I think again, the strongest action, collective action we can take is to boycott because it's stronger and rejects the entire system and gets away from the frame of the D or the R. The third parties can't win. Everybody knows it, the candidates and the voter. So let's just reject the whole system. It's really not offering us options and choices, and we can't advance what we want politically. So it's best to just refrain.
What I get a lot of, too, from people is that, you know, and I like Jill Stein. I like her as a person. I like, you know, 90% of her views on, so we're very close ideologically, except I'm a socialist and she's a reform capitalist. And so what I think, I hear a lot of people say is, you know, your candidacy is so divisive, Cindy, you should rally around Jill Stein. Why don't people say, Jill, your candidacy is so divisive, why don't you rally around, you know, the Peace and Freedom Party ticket? So that kind of thing is just divisive, I think.
It doesn't really help at all. And people don't know what to do. And the vote doesn't, running around with your little ticket, the voting booth doesn't do much. I know, it's frustrating. When people say that to you, how do you respond?
I say that. Why don't you have her rally around me because I'm a socialist.
Right.
And I think socialism, a socialist revolution is the way to go, not green capitalism.
Right.
So that's my answer.
You know what?
And let me call, is Mike Michael Reckenwald? I don't think he'd mind me saying his
name.
Oh,
Michael. You said his last name, huh?
I know, but I don't think he would mind. Are you on the call, Michael?
I don't think so.
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, so, nice to hear you.
You want to have a little chat with Terry?
Sure, why not? Yeah.
It's good to hear from you, Michael.
Yes.
How you doing? So, I mean, I think we talked about this before, but... I'm with Cindy. I'm a socialist too, and that's what I think is really needed is organizing for a revolution. And I don't know. I guess the question I have from my standpoint: Do you think that will ever come through the ballot box, or will there have to be some other? I guess I'll address this to Cindy too. Do you think that there's any chance that we could ever mount a revolution through the ballot box, or are we going to be left with other means? Are we going to have to take
That's a good question.
Well, let me go first because I have answered
this
as well. I think that what we're doing, all our efforts, whether it's Occupy or running for office or doing a boycott of the elections or a boycott of whatever, all of our efforts, I think, are not going to be successful before the collapse of the empire. I envision that this empire is going to collapse before we get a revolution going, or before we get, somebody in office that is not a Democrat or a Republican. All empires collapse, and I think right now we're witnessing the end stage of an empire and collapse. So my idea is, what can we do to push it? Instead of trying to reform it to forestall that collapse, because that collapse of the empire will save lives, millions of lives around the world. So,
yeah,
Michael, what's your thought on that?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was so whenever the 2008 crisis came, I thought it was the greatest opportunity to let the system collapse.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that Obama, when he stepped forward to bail it out and to support the bailout, it was very clear. I think it was clear anyway, but I mean that made it should have made it clear for anybody who had any question about that.
Right.
That if we have a chance for the system to fall, we have a chance for the entire financial and oligarchy to collapse, and instead of letting it go, mm-hmm. instead of letting it fall, we propped it up.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that the people can't collapse it. I don't think we can collapse it. I think the global economy, the global capitalist, it'll implode with what they're doing. It just can't keep expanding, and I don't think there's anything we can do except watch it and as Cindy said, keep nudging it along with our resistance and our actions a bit to help topple it. You know, there's been a little cheeky something online. It's I don't know how real it is. It's a little humorous. It's called Revolutionaries for Romney, and it says, you know, get him in to really push it over the edge because it's going to be disastrous. And they have these, you know, young people with kind of the anarchist garb, bandanas and the tattoos, and they said Revolutionary for Romney with this idea of helping to really push it over the edge. But it's just something I hadn't seen before. I seemed a little half humorous, but this idea of Romney will help push it over.
Somebody emailed me and told me that I shouldn't have you on my show because you support Romney, and I told her she was crazy. And
Romney, Harry.
Yeah, Harry supports.
And now here I am talking about Revolutionaries for Romney.
That's why she said. So of course, if we don't support Obama, we must be right wing Republicans, right? Or racist. That's the only thing that must happen. So thank you, Michael, for being on the call. And
bye, Michael.
Okay, bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye. We have time, probably about 3 minutes for the woman who kept on popping in to pop back in.
She wants in, yep.
Yeah. Is she still here?
Hello, Rachel, I think.
Yeah.
Rachel.
Okay, so you
I'm
have
still
a
few here. Minutes. I'm still here. I had to unmute my line.
Okay, great. You have a few minutes?
Okay, great. I'm glad to have 3 minutes. I'll say it very quickly. Europeans would never tolerate this election, and they are in the streets in Spain and in Greece, and we've had people in the streets in Latin America, and they know how to throw out.
I forgot about it.
Hello? What's happening?
I'm on mute.
Hello?
I'm on mute.
Hello?
I don't know what that is,
Hello?
Sounds like someone else
And what I feel is that we have to follow the example of Egypt. They got a 49% participation in their boycott, and their government is falling because it did not get the permission of the people. We have to follow these international examples and take ourselves more seriously. And I also want to say something to you ladies. I feel and the women I work with in the Occupy movement have issued declarations for 50-50 gender parity as a human right as of July 4th. July 1st and July 4th. We women are critical to good decision making. You don't protect the environment, peace, or children and human rights and family leave and all of the issues that women need and men need and children need if you don't have the 51% in office. Our media has dumbed the American female down to think that she has to expect another 200 years of all-male government. It is the time for, as Desmond Tutu and Bianca Jagger have said, for the women to revolt. And it's the same for the minorities. Why don't they have any one senator? This election, no matter who wins the presidential race, will wind up with a rank of 92 if it's that good for women, and it's a terrible situation for minorities. Why in the world would anyone enter the voting booth when they are so hurting themselves? We have trained our women and our minorities to be slaves and wimps and wet doodles and just go along with whatever the men pass down on us who are taking their orders from the corporate patriarchs. It is time.
I'm slightly offended by this. I don't fit any of those descriptions at all. Cindy, how about you?
I'm not a wet noodle or a wimp or...
But you don't have the representation that the Europeans, Africans, and Latin Americans have, and that's why you're not your policies are not being followed.
I have a little trouble with that, because you're really talking about our elected officials, and we're saying our elected officials are sort of useless and against us, so why would you be suggesting that we need a certain type of elected official?
I'm sorry?
You know, and it's a little offensive to women. I don't find that description really
don't
fits.
Don't you want to have 50% of women in office?
I don't think that's really the answer. It's about what
it's
class...
Europeans and the Africans and the Latin Americans do, so we Americans have to catch up or we'll remain at 92.
It's really about which class you serve. You're getting into identity politics a bit, whether it's the blackface president or females. It's about which class someone serves.
Well, you certainly have recruited media boycott, but that's my primary reason. I will not, myself and many of the women I'm working with, will not accept a government that has 84% patriarchs ruling over the women who in the thousands of years of his history have not yet had office. It is an insult to our gender, and it is a destructive process for the human race. Every study shows when women are in equal presence, you have environmental protection, you have peace policy.
Can you give an example of that? I mean,
Europeans are full of examples of it. They all have family leave of 2 and 3 years. Germany has 32% women in their office right now. Rwanda has 50%. All the villages of India have had 50% for several years. They started out at 33%.
We have females in office, women
That's what the warlords of Afghanistan ask for. They say, give us the same percentage that the U.S. government has, because they know that at that low percentage, you co-opt women.
You're right now over-talking a woman that you're purporting, you're pro-woman, but you're talking
over
another.
Sorry, I'm very tested about this, but I'll let you talk.
Well, thank you. I'm saying we have women in all high positions here, but we go with this identity politics. It's about the power structure and the class one serves. To me, it's really not so much about gender. It's about the system's power structure.
Well, I guess you're not listening to the studies then.
But I have a question. Would we be better off if Hillary Clinton was president? Or
no.
Condoleezza Rice
no.
was president?
She's a token of the corporatocracy.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, that's Terry's point. That in
I'm not asking for one female or 16% female. Every study shows when you get the critical mass between 33% and 50%, women act like women and they don't get co-opted to the male patriarchal agenda.
Our system would have 50% female capitalists. So how would that help?
I don't think so. Most of the women in our country, the studies have shown that the women are the highest group, and occupiers are the highest group in wanting to cut the military budget.
But all this system can put up into higher office is capitalist. That's all you can really get.
No, I'm a socialist too. And most of these countries that have women in office are socialists. Okay.
Can I just break in because we're out of time? So is it Rochelle? Is that your name?
Yes. And I have a website called Boycott the Election to Save the Earth. It doesn't show up when you put Boycott the Election in into Google. You have to put up Boycott the Election to Save the Earth.
Okay, great. I was going to ask you about that so we could go and look at those studies, and and we can post it on the newsletter I send out about this call. So, Terry, do you have any closing remarks?
I just really want to thank you so much for doing such a fabulous job, Cindy Sheehan, for having me on as your guest. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Well, Terry Lee, thanks for taking your time.
Well, that was our show for today. I hope you enjoyed it. And as always, I hope you learned something. And I hope you were inspired. Next week, I'm going to have another community conference call. This one will be with our guests, Cindy and Craig Corey. And they're the parents of courageous Rachel Corey. And they just had a verdict in their case against Israel for the death of their daughter. And I want them to come on and talk about the case and the verdict and the Rachel Corey Peace and Justice Foundation. And I want you to come on and ask questions. And if you have questions for Cindy or Craig, please email me at cindysheehansoapbox@gmail.com. And information about the call is at my website, cindysheehansoapbox.com. I'd like to thank Don DeBar at Community Progressive Radio, and he does the engineering for me. I'd like to thank my producer, Mikey. I'd like to thank my guest, Terry Lee, and everybody who participated on this call. And as always, I'd like to thank you the most for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out for now.